Special Japanese news report brought to you by Japanese Radio. Dateline Tokyo. A likeness of President Kennedy sitting in wooden rocking chair goes on market here in Tokyo next month. The spring-wound toy, which has a wardrobe ranging from a football uniform to a full-dress tuxedo, will sell for 74 yen, or about $6.95 America. When you wind up the toy, the JFK doll rocks back and forth and plays the tune, "Happy Days Are Here Again." We repeat, "Happy Days Are Here Again." End of special bulletin, Tokyo Radio. Stay tuned for quiz show, which follows immediately. All together now, gang. I'm sitting on top of the world. Ho-ho, on top of the world. I'm a-sitting on top of the world. I'm sitting on top of the world. Actress, singer Jane Powell won a divorce from stockbroker Patrick Nerney after telling a judge Nerney, her husband, once silenced her at a dinner party by telling guests in a loud voice, "We've heard enough about you all evening. Now let's talk about me." Wah, 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 wah. I'm sitting on top of the world. I wish I knew the words to that thing. You don't know them. Nobody knows the words to that tune. I mean, it's one of those things that's so terrible you just automatically block it out. Oh, I'm sitting on top of the world. Oh, that's terrible. Thank you, Walter. Just hold that in abeyance there. We may need that in case we start to sink. You know? Oh, you want to know how the case came out? Well, they gave her the divorce, of course. It was Hollywood. They gave her the divorce because of extreme cruelty. Extreme cruelty. Wow, 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 wow. Have you ever tried to talk over Ethel Merman? Wow, 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 wow. Rick, ticka, ticka, ting. All together now, gang. I wish I knew the words to that thing. Are there words to it except I'm sitting on top of the world? La ta 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 ta. That's a very bad. Yes, indeed. Indeedy mo. Indeedy mo. Well, I'll say one thing about Miss Powell. She certainly is honest. But very few people ever admit to why they do it, you know. And after all, if you've got a giant ego, you might as well admit it. You know, very few people. After all, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, when you're a big, famous type actress, you know. Speaking of that, you know, that in Philadelphia they've started a dial-a-psychiatrist plan? Oh, yes, in case you know, there's a terrible emergency at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're really bugged. Well, you can dial a psychiatrist. Now, I don't know whether the psychiatrist who comes to the phone is on tape or not. You can dial a prayer. You know that, Walt. Here in New York, you can dial a prayer if you want. And in Chicago, they've got it already set up, and it's working. It's been working wonderfully for the last 6 or 7 months. This dial a friend. And, oh, yes, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you wake up, and you're staring at the ceiling, you know, and you see those old neon lights flashing outside of your pad, and you can hear the traffic going by, and you're lonely, and nobody loves you. You jump up, and for a lousy little dime, you dial this wonderful voice. Now, I don't know whether or not you're supposed to dial the psychiatrist before or after you dial the prayer. Wow, 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 wow. What the pow, pow, pow. All together, gang. Oh, you're singing well. Wah, 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 wah. Wah, 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 wah. A very difficult. difficult legal, a very difficult legal situation came to light the other day in Norwood, New Jersey. They have a thing, and I have here a very interesting note here from the law, from the law unit itself. Quote, I am reading to you the law. Mr. and Mrs. Blank and Mr. Blank live together as a single housekeeping unit. Mr. Blank and Mrs. Blank live together as a single housekeeping unit. They are not related by blood or marriage. Do they constitute a family? In no reported case has there been an adjunctation of the question whether a zoning ordinance may constitutionally deny to persons who live together as a single housekeeping unit the continuing right to do so simply because one or more of them is unrelated to the others by blood or marriage. The court held, until compelled to do so by a New Jersey precedent squarely in point, this court will not conclude that persons who have economic or other personal reasons for living together as a bona fide single housekeeping unit and who have no other orientation commit a zoning violation just because they're not related. Oh, well, you know, there's a lot of things about zoning. You have one family zones, you have two family zones. Well, what if two people are living who aren't a family, and they're living in a one family zone and they're not a family? You understand? I reckon think I have to explain fine points of law here to you. You reckon think. Wow. You know how neighbors are. They got bugged. You know, everybody gets really bugged when somebody's really having fun. I'm telling you, nobody gets more teed off when they look across that court. When you're living in one of these apartment houses, you know, has a court. Nobody gets more bugged than a group, you know, family living in a house, and they're really hating each other, hitting each other and yelling and hollering, and the wearing blender keeps blowing out, and, the bulbs are always burning out, and the TV set doesn't work, and the dog has, you know, that hasn't been housebroken, and he's 34 years old. You know, that whole, and the son is 28, and he isn't housebroken. Nothing's high, and you keep looking across the court, and you see this couple, and they're really, you know, no, boy. Next thing you know, there's a petition. Wow, 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 wow. I'm singing pretty good tonight, and I don't know why somebody doesn't give me the lyrics to I'm sitting on top of the worldy. Huh? Aren't there no words to that? That's what I thought. For crying out loud, I'm singing it right then. I'm singing an instrumental. You know, it's a funny thing, though, about how we get all hung up. I don't like to approach you seriously tonight on a subject like this. After all, it's a rotten, rainy Tuesday night. And, it's just a rotten, crummy, rainy, rotten, crummy, rainy, crummy, rotten Tuesday night. And we're sitting around here. And so I don't like to bring up, you know, here it is. It's, you know, I think maybe the reason it's a rotten Tuesday night is because it's a habit with us. You know what? We believe that Tuesday nights are rotten. So we sit here and it becomes, it becomes rotten. Well, you know, I it's funny how few of us really admit how much habit plays in our lives. Did I ever tell you about the guy that there's been a great deal of, well, there's been a lot of scientific speculation about and a lot of talk is being written. Of course, one thing about it, they don't let much of it out in the print because you'll understand when I tell you what it's about. I met this guy, and I was at a university at one point where they were doing some scientific research on him. But 17 years ago, Walt, this guy in Euclid, Ohio, decided that eating was largely habit. In fact, eating was habit. And gradually, over a period of about 7 months, he broke himself completely of the habit of eating. Literally did. Just, you know yourself that you can cut down on your food day by day by day. And if you do it gradually enough, your body will acclimatize itself to the new conditions that are arising, which is like less stuff is coming in. You know, forget the Baby Ruth bars today. And then the next day you lay off the beer and, you know, and forget the Baby Ruth bars too. And then the third day you knock off the popsicles. And then the fourth day you lay off the jawbreakers. And, you know, and finally you're really cutting down your basic food until finally you arrive at the day when you've given up Milky Ways. And you've given up caramel corn and all the important stuff. Sure, and then finally you're only left with such trivial fringe stuff like, lamb chops. You're left with, these things are easy to dispense with. You're left with hamburgers. You're left with a steak or two. No, I'm telling you the truth. This guy, by the end of 7 months, and you can look it up, by the end of 7 months, was not eating a single solitary piece of food 24 hours running, week in and week out. Now, this is what was interesting about the guy. We want to hear the rest of the story. He continued this for about a year, and all of his perceptions were fantastically heightened. Oh, yeah, he did everything, all the stuff that he had thought he was, you know, was going to do, he did. That he didn't do before that. Oh, he got to be a fantastic swinger. For years, he'd been walking past the library looking at that chick in there. Behind the desk, you know, where they stamp the books, the one with the thick glasses. He'd been looking at that girl for years. Well, 2.5 weeks after he gave up celery, after he gave up food, he went in and did something about it. Years. Now, I'm telling you the truth. This guy became the biggest swinger in Euclid, Ohio. No food. You'd be surprised how much food plays in your life. Oh, really? You'd be surprised. Some people's entire social life is built on food. The only time the family even looks at each other is when they're sitting down around to eat. And even then, they don't look at you. Pass the... give me the mashed potatoes, will you? Shut up. One guy's got his head in the papers, and the other guy's listening to the radio, and two of them are just arguing the same old blah, 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 same argument that's going on, you know, for 24 years there on Grand Concourse. It's the only time they ever get together. Well, if you could do something about the food, get rid of that food, you know. Speaking of old long-term arguments, this is WORAM at FM New York. It's one of the oldest stations in the business, you know, and beginning to show around the knees a little bit here and there. Do you notice that, Walt? Do you notice what happened to the rug the other day in the front office there outside of Smitty's? But everything is beginning to slowly dissolve. Right? Well, that's all right. We're still here. Nevertheless, yeah, and this guy gave up eating entirely. Well, you can understand why the papers won't play this up. Do you know how much money the average newspaper makes a year from food advertising alone? Boy, let me tell you, there's plenty of covering up going on here. Do you realize how much A&P means to the Daily News? I don't have to tell you. It's a very good tune now. I'm beginning to like it. I'm used to it now. And, of course, I know a lot of people are going to get bugged when they hear this and say that can't be true, but it is true. I know about this guy, and I met him. And I'll tell you how what he did for food. Now, you want to understand what he did, you're going to ask me immediately. Well, you'd be surprised at how many calories are in the air to begin with. Oh, yes, yes, yes. In this new industrial world that we're living in, you'd be surprised. Have you ever wondered a lot of times, seriously, why if you go on a diet and you go on a diet for about a month and you don't lose any weight and you've cut down your food way down and your stomach is growling and yelling around and booming away and you still continue to be fat or you continue to gain weight? Have you wondered about that, Ed, why you can't gain weight when you go on a diet? Well, let me tell you, it's because of the air. Do you know in some areas of this city, now I'm going to tell you a fact, in some areas of the city, the caloric content of 10 cubic feet of air is equal to the average hot fudge sundae. Now, yes, what do you? I'm serious, I'm not kidding you. First of all, we're going to have to go back then if the people are getting confused. I can see that right now. Miss Carlton Fredericks does not talk to you about locale air, does he? Well, I'm going to tell you about it. Do you know what do you think a smell is to begin with? An aroma. What is this? Well, I'll tell you what it is. Why do we have to go back to basic physics here for crying out loud? An aroma is a tiny atomized particles of the food or of the stuff itself is floating in the air. In short, when you're smelling, you go past a hot dog joint, you know, Ed, and you smell hot dogs, you're really ingesting some hot dogs. Yes, that's right. There is the elixir of the aroma of hot dog floating around the air outside of Natick's. So if you stood around for 10 minutes outside and breathed deeply, forget it. Down around the old fanny, just like that, and you can't do anything about it. I'm serious about it. Now, I knew a guy who was an out-of-work actor here who lived for over 4 years just by standing in front of the Planters Peanut Shop on Times Square between the hours of 2 and 5:30 every afternoon, and he just breathed deeply. That's all. Now, what my friend did, this guy in Euclid, Ohio, what he did was learn how to breathe properly. You have to inhale completely, and then when you inhale completely, you have to learn how to get all the proper food value out of every breath you take. No problem there. But the one value, of course, of breathing this way, and the one value of living off of this sort of thing, is because you live and you have a very well-balanced diet. Because it is a little-known dietary law of nature that only the really essential foods properly atomize to be ingested through the lung system itself. That's right. Boy, let me tell you, D'Agostino isn't going to let this out. Who's covering up? I ask you, who's covering up? Huh? All together now. Let's go. Now, you think I'm putting you on, but it is almost... No, I'm not. I'm really not. I'm serious about this. It is a food is about 95% habit. You know, it's a funny thing. One of the things that many GIs learned, for example, when they went into the far Pacific, they found that the Japanese soldiers lived on practically nothing. Seriously, these muscular, and some of them are really muscular, tremendously vital, wildly athletic people lived on almost nothing. They did. They lived a little tiny handful of rice and one small whiff of fish a day and a sip of lukewarm water. And perhaps the suggestion of a pinch of salt. And they were ready to take on the entire 3rd Marines. Yeah. The guys would break into caves, for example. The Japanese would be well entrenched there. They would break into caves and they would figure, well, they're going to get some rations, you know. They wind up with a half a pound of rice, 2 ounces of vanilla, 3 pinches of salt, and a small cork. That would be 1 month ration for an entire battalion. There's the truth. Now, see, they learned all. I don't want to take over Mr. Frederick's department here, but boy, there's a lot of covering up. You know, speaking of covering up, as long as we're here tonight, we have a story tonight. Of course, you know, as I say, there's so many things are covered up. We don't know which way to go. Eddie, do you have important, terrible, embarrassing moment music? Well, just hold it there, and I'll tell you when. I just hold it. You got it all set there now? Terrible, embarrassing moment. And I think the only time you can deal with the terrible, embarrassing moment is when you deal with it properly in a Gothic fashion. Oh, yes. What do you think embarrassment is? What is embarrassment? Have you ever thought about that? What constitutes the nature of embarrassment? What literally is embarrassment? You can think of embarrassing moments, but why do you refer to them as embarrassing? What is embarrassment? Hold it up. New York, the lie detector is under new and blistering scientific attack because it trapped the wholly innocent bank vice president and almost brought him to total ruin. The allegation was made that it is a growing practice of banks and other employers to subject money-handling employees to periodic tests by lie detector, to quote, to keep them honest. This instrument is properly called the polygraph. It is hooked up to the testee to record responses of his autonomic nervous system, over which he has no voluntary control while he answers questions. Have you ever stolen any money from the bank or its customers? This vice president was asked. No, he replied. But the recording needle gave a violent jerk. This was taken by the machine's operator to be positive proof that the vice president was lying. No, no, I didn't know it. No, no, no. The books were exhaustively audited. There was no shortage. If he had been stealing, he had been extremely clever about it. Again, he was sent to the polygraph, and again the needle jerked. When the question about stealing from bank or customers came up, it jerked violently. Another audit was as fruitless as the first had been, and then another recourse to the polygraph. And this time the young vice president was so badgered, he, quote, confessed. Though consciously feeling utterly innocent, and described totally and completely the method by which he had stolen, he confessed. Still, another audit revealed that this method had not been employed. And once again, that no funds were missing. At this point, the despairing bank president, who had believed in the young man's integrity all along, but was swayed by the polygraph's findings, sent him to a psychiatrist. These were Drs. H.B. Dearman and B.M. Smith of the University of Virginia School of Medicine in Richmond. They applied psychiatric science to the young man for months and months and months and demonstrated conclusively that he lied only once, when he had confessed. He had never stolen a penny from either the bank or its customers. This dangerous false positive came about because of complications in the workings of the man's mind on the unconscious level, they said. He had unconscious hostilities involving both his wife and his mother, and both were customers of the bank. The key question, have you ever stolen from any employees, customers, or the bank itself? Jerked the autonomic nervous system because it invoked those hostilities against both mother and wife. Yes, I did it! Dearman and Smith reported with indignation to the Technical Journal of the American Psychiatric Association. They said the operators of polygraphs are often private detectives of agencies employed to keep watch over employees. Many of these operators are incompetent to interpret the polygraph charts accurately, they said. These operators do their best to convince all testees the polygraph is infallible and, quote, it is impossible to beat the machine. But the polygraph is capable of producing false negatives as well as false positives, and the latter are capable of causing harm, which cannot, we repeat, cannot be calculated.
I did it! Take me away! I confess, late at night, after I had left the bank, I went down to the corner of 17th and Vine, and thereupon I bought myself a large Jimmy, a small Jack, two acetylene torches, and a pair of pliers. At 10:35 that night, I drove my 1947 Plymouth Coupe to the corner of 17th and Chestnut. There I alighted, and taking the pliers, and taking the acetylene torches, and the two hacksaws which I had purchased, I crept on all fours past the fire hydrant, past the wastebasket on the corner of 16th and Chestnut. I turned left at the alley, and then I began slowly to burrow my way through the brick wall. I did it. 5 minutes later, I am next to the great steel vault, taking out my hacksaw and my corkscrew, taking out my bottle opener, taking out my Valentine opener. I went to work. 5 minutes later, money! Oh, I am rich! Money! Yes, I did it. Take me away. I'm sorry. I knew it was wrong when I did it, but I did it. It's much better to confess and get it off my chest. Please take me away. I don't want to talk about it any longer.
Cut it out. How about that for a hair curler? No, that is That's a true story, by the way. That was a United Press International story, and I read it word for word. Not one word changed. And the point is the last paragraph there, where it talks about the feeling that you can't beat the machine. This is probably the closest to the truth. And the reliance on the machine as an infallible thing is becoming more and more a gigantic human problem. I suspect the day will come, really, when we're going to have some kind of a mechanical transistorized president. I really do. It may not be a president, but it will be the advisor to the president. It will be very close. And eventually our president himself will be more or less of a figurehead. And they will have an instantaneous way of getting the public opinion all over the world, all over the world. It'll come in great big vast tapes automatically. And all the president has to say is, yes, what they want, I see, 97.4% of the people all over the world want their heads cut off. Off, 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 off. And off it shall be. It's the democratic way. Oh, yes, right. You cannot beat the machine, and the machine never lies. That goes back to an old cliche. You know one of the old cliches, that the camera never lies? There is no other machine that lies more than the camera. Are you aware of that? Very simple, with the right kind of camera, right kind of filter. No problems. Oh, yes, it's one of the most lying instruments there is. Gee, speaking of lying instruments, we've given the station break, haven't we? Yes, indeed. It's funny how this sneaks up on you. You know, speaking of that, I'm walking along the street here tonight. You know, you can dial a psychiatrist. Very simple. Very simple. You know, I wonder if you can dial a smart aleck, some city, you know? You want somebody to jazz up the party? And there's a wet blanket, nothing but wet blankets. It's terrible. You have ever been to a party when 17 wet blankets get together? There's nothing but wet blankets in the party? Well, that's when you can, for a lousy dime, in San Fernando, California, you can dial a smart aleck, except they don't call it that. It's a better word. And it's amplified, you see, and you dial it, and this guy starts making rotten remarks. Oh, for crying out loud, look at that one, the fat one, the one with the girdle. Hey, baby. 10 minutes, you got a swinging going thing there. Everybody gets mad, fist fights break out, and this guy keeps yelling over the phone. It's on tape. You can dial either a chick or a... What is the reverse of a chick? It's hard to tell these days. Huh? No, I mean, it's hard to tell these days. It is. It's very difficult. They're putting numbers on some of the Broadway stars. While we're on the... You can't tell the players without numbers in this game. Well, while we're on the subject of... I'll tell you what's the matter. You keep... Hey, are there any words to that wonderful song? Can I have them, please? No words? I don't understand what you said. They didn't understand when they called up. Is that what you said? There were no words, huh? Oh, there were words. I would like to, because we've had 7 requests from Staten Island to sing I'm Sitting on Top of the World. No, hold it there now. We're not going to sing it yet, Ed. Speaking of sitting on top of the world, the guy will mail the words. Be careful now. When you fool around with the mails, you get us all in trouble. I don't like this kind of stuff here, get caught in that way. They keep opening my mail here, you know, and I get to, some very embarrassing stuff flies out of some of those letters. Every time they get a letter, it says, that fathead. Immediately, it comes right to my desk, not even opened, Ed. And if they get one that says, that honest, sober, industrial, wonderful, fantastic, great person, they send it right up to John Gambling. Crying out loud. I tell you, it says, there's a note in my voice. Have you noticed that? You know, I'll tell you, though, I'm going to tell you one of the great moments. I should never really tell you this. Would you please get my spring music up there? It's a spring. She knows about it. Spring music there. That is not spring music, please. That is Caught in the Dismal Swamp music you just played. Hey, when you were a kid, were you hung up on the idea of the Dismal Swamp? Is there anybody out there... Not yet, Oh, by the way, we have a report here that they just crowned Miss Fat Italy of 1963. Boy, those Italians lay out the truth. Now they're holding the voting for Miss Skinny Italy of 1963. They really are. Well, that pasta. Well, now you reset that simple, undignified, wonderful solitary theme there for my spring music, and I am about to describe to you an event that happened to me over 425 years and that is still affecting people in the Midwest. And they don't even know. I bet there isn't one single person in this place knows why. But his life every day is affected by guess who? Oh, boy. Anyway, I'm going to tell you one of the greatest moments that ever happened in my life, and that it still affects other people, people probably who weren't even born at that time. This is like 1,000 years ago, and I'm a kid, see. Do you remember, is there any clown out there, this is directed particularly at men, is there any clown out there who remembers with almost unbearable affection a job that you had that you dug so much, you really dug the job, just absolutely, completely. I mean, the kind of job that you know somehow you couldn't keep, you wouldn't keep forever. It's the kind of job that couldn't possibly be kept forever, but a job that somehow had little violins and all kinds of stuff playing around it. Every time you get there, you know, you sit on the front there with the thing and they're driving it. The great, great billowing waves of happiness. Great, great thunderstorms of ecstasy would roar through your soul at the age of 16 when you're on your job. The job. You ever had a job like that? Well, I'm going to tell you a job that I'm sure that I don't recall ever telling about this job, and there is hardly a spring day goes by, the kind of day like today, when it's warm and soft and it rains and that warm water comes down and you know, Dad, it's spring. You know, that kind of thing. It's in you. It's there. Well, hardly a day like that goes by, but what there isn't a peculiar, strange, like a bitter little electric shock goes through me just for an instant there when I look and I see the sky and all that, and I remember that job. And I'll tell you what that job was. I was 15. I was a sophomore in high school, and I don't know of any group of people who are better named than sophomores. I was a sophomore in high school, and I had just made the sophomore scene. I was about to start being a sophomore. I wasn't really a sophomore yet. It was like next semester, you know, Ed. And I was 15 years old, and I got this job. Now, I can tell you all the details about it. I was paid $3 a day, which was an insanely unbelievable large amount of money for me at the point. $3 a day. But I was working for a guy I'll tell you what he looked like. He looked like if you could cross Abraham Lincoln with Daniel Boone and just a little touch of Lou Ayres, you would have this guy. He was bronzed, he was hollow-cheeked, and he had sort of almost white blue eyes. And he was tall, and he was a surveyor. I was a surveyor's helper, along with three other kids. And this was a surveyor, though, who didn't go around and measure vacant lots for garages. He did much bigger things than that. In fact, he had like two other young engineers who were working with him, you know, young guys that sat around and did all kinds of transit work and everything else. And the three of us, the three kids, worked for this guy, and we absolutely worshipped him. Like the minute we got on this job, it was just because he would, you know how you see the Marlboro ads? That guy outlined against the sky and it says, "It's Marlboro country, by George. Great and wide and free. Great billowing clouds. Beautiful, beautiful freedom. Yes, where men are men. And where sinews are rough and hard and tough. And where steel is steel. It's Marlboro country." It was that kind of a guy, you know? But the job, I cannot describe to you what the job was. Well, I'll try. It was spring, you see, right after school, and we would go out and work. But we would go out and work on the prairie. Do you know anything about the prairie that lies just outside of Chicago and lies outside the big, flat, rolling country in Indiana that is cut by these dark, really almost sinister rivers? You know, the rivers here in the east are very different from the rivers out there. The rivers in the Midwest flow much slower, and they're absolutely opaque. You cannot see through the water in a river out there. If you took a cup of that water, it would be like you have a cup of very dark coffee. You can't see anything through it, absolutely nothing. And they just move very slowly. And the banks are gradual banks. They don't have cliff-like banks out there, and it's all mud. And they rise slowly, and rimming each river for mile after mile after mile is a kind of swampland filled with owls and filled with mud hens and filled with muskrats. And every day we would go out and we were widening a river. We were laying out the line where one day they would come through with a dredge and would widen the river. And we were laying in metal stakes here, 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 here. We were literally widening a river by 50 feet on each side. Well, the heat was incredible. Of course, I'm 15, see, nothing but a pair of shorts on. Millions of mosquitoes. And I'm pulling that chain. You know what a chain is, a surveyor's chain? A chain is that long steel measuring tape. That's the chain. You hear of a chain man and a pin man? I know that all the civil engineers are flipping out there. Well, I'll tell you what a chain man and a pin man is. It took me a month to learn how to work that chain. I got to be the best chain man in the Middle West. I could handle a 100-yard chain, believe me, like it was a 7-inch piece of string. Roll that thing up, run it out, and it's all a trick. You flip it over your elbow, you run that thing out, and you know how to work the chain so that there is a minimum of a deviation from actual measurement. You follow what I'm saying here? This is a 100-yard chain or a 50-yard chain. And they measure this. It's measured all the way from the county line, 9 miles back in the benchmarks. You know, nothing is more exciting than digging in a swamp for a benchmark that was laid down in 1822 by a pioneer. Seriously, we would have these great county maps out. And we're in country that they don't even have farms, you know, just long, rolling, waste country with this river. And Mr. Millard was his name. And Millard would say, "All right, man, here, dig here." And he'd tell me and he'd tell the other kid and we'd start digging. And he'd say, now look, he said, "I want you to dig very carefully because this is a wooden benchmark." And we would dig and dig and dig and dig and dig through the mud and the sand and slowly moving it out with our hands. And he's watching. And then finally we'd see a little scrap of wood. Just a little sliver of wood. And then you dig. It's like an archaeologist. And then you're about 4 feet down now. Down, down in the mud. And the water's coming in. You keep measuring. And finally, there it is. There's a little wooden plaque that says BM/24-17-3PLT1. Carved by some guy just like you who laid it down there in 1821. The benchmark. You know about these? Oh, it's a wildly exciting world. So every day, you know, it was an insane thing. So one day, we were on this job. We'd been on this job for about a month. It was a long job, and they had been working it in shifts, and he was the big man, the boss. So one day, we went out there, and this was actually doing something that you just don't believe is done. You know, you can't believe it's done unless you're really there. Can you imagine, Eddie, going out on a bright Monday morning, whole bunch of you guys in a truck and a couple of guys to pick up, and two or three of you riding in a car. And, oh, nothing is more exciting than a surveyor's automobile. They drive in cars, you know, regular cars that are all battered with all kinds of junk and transits in the back. I used to love to work the transit. There was nothing more exciting to me. My next summer, I became a transit man. I'll tell you about that sometime, which is unbelievably exciting. Sighting in on that transit, you know, with those crosshairs, and you're calling out the figures, and the kid's sitting down next to you, putting them down in his, oh, boy. Well, anyway, can you imagine setting out on a bright, sunny Monday morning in the spring to go out to drive maybe 20 miles through the country alongside the river, and you come to this great, big, open field, a few little trees and a few little bushes, and there's some swamp over there. And you're getting ready to lay out a whole town. The streets. The whole thing. Believe me, this is more exciting than Thornton Wilder. Yes. And so for one solid month, he has this great big plat out there, and it has all these roads and things. It looks like Babylon or something. You know, it's a plant. It has all these circles and little streets and everything else. A great big. It's going to be about 2,000 houses out there. A whole town, you know, like 5,000 people are going to live here, you know. And we're laying this thing out all day long. And every time we'd come to the end, he would make a thing. He'd mark in his little plat. He would mark something. So finally, one day I'm standing next to Millard, and Millard dug me. We're standing there, and we had finished laying out this circle. It was about 2.5 blocks long, had a circle, and came back to the main road. He looked right at me and says, "Well, what'll we name it?" I said, "What'll we name it?" He says, "Yes, what'll we name it?" And all of a sudden, spring was all around me. And I didn't want to tell him, you know, what we're going to name it. He said, "I'll tell you what we're going to name it. We're going to name it Shepherd Circle." I said, "Oh, no." He says, "Yep." He wrote it right down there. It is now registered. Twice I have been back and driven my MG up and around Shepherd Circle and out again. Talk about immortality. At the age of 16, immortal.
Okay, Ted. This is WOR Radio, your station for news.